party tonight!
Oh!
TV party tonight!
Oh!
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my circuits.
Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Scary Dog.
Vincent and Blurzball.
Futurama.
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattlegem Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And we've got a double header for you this evening. We are talking about not one, but two wrestling programs. We will be covering the Brody Lee Celebration of Life that took place on AEW Dynamite on, I believe it was December 30th. And we will also be reviewing NXT New Year's Evil, because I'm evil, my middle name is Misery, January 6th. I am joined by the Podsman. First, riding up on his horse branded with an X, he's the master of all of those dirty muties over on his podcast channel. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Sheehan, how do you do, sir?
Hey, how are you? I'm very, very psyched to talk about my loss of fandom in professional wrestling as it grows by the minute. I'm hoping that maybe we could turn things around here, because I'm to the point now where the only reason I'm watching this shit anymore is so I get to talk to you guys about it. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my social circle if I stop watching professional wrestling, and that's what keeps me tuning in and DVRing and deleting things like when I'm halfway through with them.
I will say this in conjunction with that. I used to fast forward through a lot of NXT and Dynamite because, like, you know, who the fuck cares about Isaiah Swerve Scott?
Jizz Scott.
Yeah.
Not me.
Well, I'll get to you in a minute. You know, there was stuff on Dynamite I didn't care about. There was stuff on NXT I didn't care about, and I had other things to do, so I would, you know, kind of skip watch a lot of stuff. And then we started talking. They started labeling all their shows, so it gave us more stuff to talk about. So now I actually have to sit and focus and watch. You know, mm-hmm. I can't even like have my wife sitting next to me babbling into my ear while I'm watching my recording of Dynamite, because I have to focus and pay attention on what these nuts are saying. Speaking of what nuts are saying, ladies and gentlemen, from the Superblog Satellite and the Superblog team up, riding up on his horse through the frigid plains of intemperate, ill-tempered Canada, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Bailey, how do you do, sir?
You guys are just jealous because of our COVID freeness. That's all. You're just jealous. Now, I want to set up a precursor for our listeners here, because someone's going to ask the question, how in the hell did these guys get a negative slant on a tribute show? Well, it's about to happen. It's going to be controversial. Stuff is going to be said. People are going to be upset. And here's what I got to tell you. Shut your mouth and move on. All right, let's get going.
Perfect. That's that Canadian hospitality I've heard all about. A boot.
And by the way, nobody's allowed in. Nobody.
Yeah, really. You guys are talked down. You guys are talked locked down tighter than North Korea. Fucking man.
I got my kids moved to another house. They're out.
Chris kisses his wife through Zoom. That's what happens. All right, before we get into this, Brody Lee, John Huber, otherwise known as Luke Harper. I was sad when he passed away. I saw the news break on Twitter before anybody in my like wrestling social circle, you guys and the rest of the extended Rattledge and Broadcasting family knew about it. Like, I caught it first and shared it, and everyone went, so, Luke Harper. I didn't know him as Big Rig in the indies. I didn't really even know him in NXT as part of the Wyatt family. When the Wyatt family debuted on the main roster is where he was, and he was one of Bray Wyatt's goons, basically. I thought he was okay. I always, you know, I caught on real fast that he had really fun, interesting eyes. He had, like, wacky eyes. Which obviously so did the WWE, because his Titantron was just eyes blinking at you, real creepy like. The way that I kind of processed his passing away, and you know, like was he one of my favorites? No, but he was part But I did remember one match that he was in that I could say I remember him fondly for this match. And, of course, it was one of the multi-man ladder matches from WrestleMania, specifically the one that was in Silicon Valley, the one that was infamously famous for burying Sting. you know, that show. And so my way of processing it, my way of dealing with it was, hey, I called my son into the room, my six-year-old son, and I was like, come watch this match with me. And we rewatched the ladder match, because it's literally the one match I remember from this entire WWE career that I can say was great, that I loved it, and I loved his part in it. And the one time I saw him as a legit superstar. When he got moved to SmackDown and was part of the Bludgeon Brothers, I wasn't watching SmackDown, so I had no idea what was happening. He just showed up one day.
How dare you?
He showed up one day in his leather jumpsuit with Eric Rowan, and I'm like, what is this, and why do they have huge hammers? I thought he was the wrong guy to be the exalted one. I always thought that should have been Jake Roberts, and that if they were going to use him in the Dark Order, they should have made him like Jake Roberts' hand. Like, go kill, and then he kills for Jake Roberts. That's kind of my 50 words or less take on John Huber. He was okay.
That was more than 50 words.
Shut up. Okay. I'm using Jewish math.
Fair enough.
Don't touch it.
That's kind of my 50 words or less take on John Huber. I'm sad he died. It breaks my heart that that when children lose their fathers, you know, their parents. And he, from all reports I've seen, he was a good dude, and it's sad that he died. And that's kind of, before we get into the show itself, my thoughts and memories of the guy. Sheehan, your take on Mr. Huber, Luke Harper, Brody Lee, etc.
I thought he was underutilized. I don't watch AEW, but I thought he was underutilized in WWE. I thought there was money left on the table with him. Not as much money as the internet seems to think there was, but I think that he had untapped potential there. I think he could have went a lot further than he did. And it's really a shame that he passed when he did. It really sucks. A little aside, I used to have very similar hair and beard as Mr. Huber, and I was walking through a Sam's Club one day, and a kid thought I was him. I'm not quite as tall as him. I'm probably like 8 or 9 inches shorter than him, but...
I was going to say, what are you, 8 feet tall too?
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm just under 6 foot, but this kid asked if I was the Wyatt family guy. And since I don't look like Bray Wyatt, and I'm not bald with a long red beard, I assumed that they meant Harper, because Brown Snowman wasn't a member yet. But that's my little personal anecdote with Mr. Huber here, but it sucks that it happened. I was saddened when he was let go from WWE. Even though I know he wanted to be let go for a long, long time, it hit me when he was let go, because it's like, well, shit. He was someone I had hopes for, but he showed up on a show I don't watch, and you know, that's where he ended up.
Just a real quick aside, I was walking around the valley in Los Angeles about 20 years ago, and I was wearing the Mankind happy face with the Hannibal Lecter mask on. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I had long hair and a beard, and I'm not joking, when somebody thought I was Mick Foley. Like, is Mick Foley that much of a mark for himself that he would wear his own shirt just randomly walking around Los Angeles?
If he got the shirts for free, he would.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right, Bailey, your thoughts... on Mr. Luke Harper.
So yeah, I tell you what, this entire passing of John Huber, it was a real shock, and I can't say that I'm the biggest Brody Lee fan or Luke Harper fan, but he always seemed to be there, and he was a part of the furniture when you talk about WWE for the past few years. And I tell you what, one of the things that he's going to hang his hat on in this legacy is going to be the latter part of his career, because this guy basically took a giant bag of lemons called the Dark Order and actually made lemonade out of that thing, because for once they actually started winning a few matches. They he won belts for the first time. I mean, they actually put Brody Lee in a position where he was a main event player, or almost right at the very top of that card. And I think when it comes to on tap potential, we didn't really get to see much of anything, but right at the end of his career we saw that glimmer of what he could be. And it's a real shame. And when you see like a guy out there and his you know, his family, he leaves two sons and a wife, and it was truly heartbreaking. And I think this tribute really cemented, you know, the family guy that he was. And you know, I'll definitely miss Brody Lee. So, you know, when it comes to the man and his career, nothing really bad to say. Different parts of this tribute will be different, but as for the man, I think that he had a lot of respect in that locker room, and it was definitely a sad day as a wrestling fan, for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, so the Brody Lee tribute started with a 10-bell salute, and Brody, the eldest son, Brody Jr., could be seen wearing a Dark Order mask. They cut to a video of Jon Moxley talking about how hard it was to come up with the right words to pay tribute to his friend. He talked about knowing Lee for over a decade and how they fought in bingo halls and stadiums together. The Mox spoke about how Lee always told him how he loved being a father, and closed by saying he loved Lee like a brother and will never forget him. The stuff about him being a wrestler, okay, you know, sure. The stuff that about him being a father broke my heart. That's the thing that got to me.
Yeah.
Because it's the stuff's being about wrestling and more about the people. And I really feel bad for those kids. You know, I feel bad for any kids that lose, you know, as I said before, that lose their parent. Before we get to the first match, does anything you guys want to say anything about the Mox promo?
I will say that, you know, these promos that we're going to talk about, and there wasn't a heck of a lot of them. It wasn't like the sometimes when you have like a death in WWE, depending on who the wrestler is, they spend a lot of time dedicating, you know, superstar interviews and all that stuff. And one that really sticks out to me was the Chris Benoit one. And I know that's not a fair comparison because of the tragedy that it was. But, you know, some people seem very genuine in their thoughts. I mean, you could tell. I mean, you had Chavo Guerrero. You had all these people. I mean, they were literally melting down into tears. And then you had others who were like, can you come up with something, you know, good to say about Chris Benoit? And they're like, they're really struggling. Like, they're trying to find, well, he had great boots, you know what I mean? So they actually went with his friends, which was a good thing, because we see Moxley and I can tell that he was pretty moved. Unless he's a super great actor, I think this was a really, really good speech. I think the 10-bell salute was actually heartfelt. I mean, I think those guys were actually heartbroken there. So I mean, well done right out of the gate.
Sheen, I know you saw some of this but not all of it. When did you nope out exactly?
I watched clips. I was watching clips because I wanted to see if it was something I wanted to watch. I've never watched an AEW show. Most of the people in AEW make me want to throw a brick through my TV. So I wanted to make sure I didn't do that. You know, especially with the tribute show. Because, I mean, I think 95% of the people on this program were heartfelt and genuine with what they were doing. Then there were people who were clearly doing crying improv. At least to me.
Okay.
When I look at the clip of... Oh, say, yeah, when you want to wait till we get there?
Yeah, when we get okay. to those people, then unleash hell. Okay. So the first match was Matt Hardy and Private Party versus Colt Cabana and the Young Bucks. And the whole theme of this show was because Brody Lee was part of the Dark Order gets to win all their matches, and the Dark Order were in every single match to one degree or another. And it was a lot of multi-man matches to try to get as many people on the show fighting the Dark Order as possible. You know, it's hard to be like super critical, Bailey, of the wrestling. That, you know, I think about like the Owen Hart, the Raw show after the Owen Hart tragedy, where it was like, if you want to wrestle, and that's how some guys, you know, men especially, process grief is through some sort of physical action. Not that this is in any way resembles what I'm talking about, but it's the first example I could think of. I remember when the New York Knicks lost the NBA championship to the San Antonio Spurs, and my friend was so heartbroken he left the house and went for a run. So, you know, like some guys want to wrestle, some guys want to be do something physical to kind of deal with their grief and you know, and emotional their emotional issues, whatever the situation may be. So
some people just want to be on TV.
That too, Mr. Cynical. So the Young Bucks and Colt Cabana versus Matt Hardy and Private Party. Bailey, it was a match. I don't, you know, it seemed fine to me. What did you think?
I think it was a little step above your, you know, your wrestler dying tribute show. I think these guys had the intention of going out there and giving, you know, giving a good match and giving a good tribute. They put the Dark Order over, you know, every single match that he had here. Spoiler. Colt Cabana, which was, you know, the Dark Order member in this particular one, started out the show. And, man, let me tell you something. These guys were genuinely touched. There wasn't any, you know, put on. There wasn't no fake faces until much later in the show. But you know what? The whole Dark Order thing, if there's a win that comes out of it, I think somehow, some way, even with Brody Lee's passing, they somehow got the Dark Order over. And I think that claw symbol, and I think just the signature of the Dark Order, I think they got something there suddenly.
It's a weird world we live in where the cult becomes the, you know, the good guys. You know, the cult of incels is what the Dark Order is.
Oh my God.
They're going to be good guys now because of this passing of this poor man. The next thing that happened here, we have Darby Allin, who spoke after the break about how he met Brody when he debuted in AEW and immediately wanted to wrestle him. He said Lee had no ego and wanted to elevate everybody. Allin said he would pick Lee's brain because he was always willing to share. Lance
and then
Archer,
Brody Lee tore his head off with a clothesline, literally tore his head off with a clothesline. No mercy for Darby Allin, thank God.
Lance Archer came out in jeans and a tank top looking like Luke Harper. Eddie Kingston grabbed a mic and said he loved and missed Brody before going into heel mode and saying the Dark Order is nothing without him. God, Eddie Kingston, real other than like Roman Reigns, is the best promo in wrestling right now. We keep 100%. Saying it, but it keeps being repeated. It needs being repeated. Yeah. Evil Uno attacked Kingston before the bell to kick off the brawl, and the Murder Hawk Monster helped Uno and Stu Grayson take out all three men of the opposing team. So yeah, Lance Archer, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson defeated Eddie Kingston, the Butcher, the Baker, the Candlestick Maker, in about less than 10 minutes. I thought this was a good match. You know, yeah. I think Eddie and the Butcher and the Blade work well as a unit together. I'm always a fan of Lance Archer when he comes out there and just wrecks people, and I thought this was a good match.
Yep, I'm going to agree with that because, I mean, you talk about Eddie Kingston. He is by design and by his own hand, lifted himself to the next level with just that mic alone. I don't know if there's been a guy since CM Punk who's done so much with just a microphone to get himself over. And he's done it. He's literally got himself over because they throw these guys out through the curtain in AEW with a mic in hand and just tell them to go. And boy, Eddie Kingston goes and goes and goes. I mean, this guy is all about the stick, I'm telling you right now. And he elevates everybody that's around him. So you got the Butcher and the Blade and the Bunny. And every single one of them are, you know, are lifted up by Eddie Kingston. And of course, you know, his team took the loss here in Dark Order. Stu Grayson and his team actually has a W in the win column, believe that or not. Anyone who watches AEW Dark will know that the Dark Order, especially after Brody Lee took a few weeks off, didn't exactly have a stellar record. I got a feeling if he returned from his illness that the boys would have been, you know, scolded live on television. Trust me on that.
Okay. So... after the bout, AEW played another tribute video with several people sharing their thoughts on Lee. Cash Wheeler, Arn Anderson, Cabana, and Bryce Remsburg spoke about how he was a great family man. Yeah, that made me tear up, that part. Yeah.
I can't get over the name Cash Wheeler.
I've said this before, but it sounds like a porn name. All right. Hillbilly Jim and two midgets wrestled the Inner Circle. I'm sorry, my notes are messed up. I can't read my own handwriting. Hangman Page. Alex Reynolds. Yes, Hangman Page and Little Haiti. Hangman Page, Alex Reynolds, and John Silver took on MJF, Santana, and Ortiz. John Silver wore his own version of Lee's attire for this match alongside Alex Reynolds and Adam Page.
Which was hilarious because it didn't fit. It was bagging off the guy, and it was hilarious because they put up a story where Brody Lee gave him this uniform, but clearly it didn't see Taylor because this thing was falling off the guy. I loved it. He said, screw it, you know, I'm going to have a tribute to my friend, and I don't care if I look ridiculous. And, buddy, he pulled off ridiculous in spades.
So I think this was the one where the kid got involved, right? Where I think MJF took a cane shot from one of Brody's kids.
Yeah, so MJF went to ringside. Now, Brody Lee's son is in a Dark Order mask. He's in his business suit, similar to, you know, the Exalted One's look, you know, just like his father. And he had, you know, one of the classic ECW Singapore canes with him. And, of course, MJF, you know, always being the super heel, always on point, goes and berates the kid whose father just passed away, you know, in classic heel form. I mean, I will say one thing about MJF is that he do not hold back one bit, not for a tribute show, not for a death of anybody. He goes full metal heel. And, of course, he took a cane between the eyes for it, and it was cool. It was fun.
But yeah, he was cool enough to do the A Christmas Story cosplay, though.
Yes, that's right.
What an asshole.
Indeed.
Makes me want to puke. All right, keep going.
All right, so Wardlow took out Reynolds, and then straight from the WWE, Eric Rowan, also known as Eric Redbeard, came out and you know, and took out the Inner Circle, and then did a tribute to his buddy there, his tag team partner. Bailey, is he actually still with the company, or was he a free agent at this point? Or, I mean, like, I don't think the WWE is gonna punish him in any way, like, how, because, you know, how tone deaf can you be? But is he actually still with the company?
So there doesn't seem to be any confirmation about it. I think Meltzer and the boys were talking about it, and I think he is in free agent status, but, you know, he's definitely
not. He was let go in April, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think he was part of that purge.
He was. He's not a contract. Yeah, he's not a contracted WWE wrestler at the moment, nor he's a contracted AEW wrestler, so I don't even know if they're going to sign him. So this may be the first and last that we see of Rowan. Now, maybe with, you know, the passing, I hope and pray that they don't do the stupid thing and make him like Brody Lee's replacement, because that would be some low-class stuff. And not only that, it would not be cool to set up Rowan in that fashion either. And I hope he would have the sense not to take anything like that should some idiot, you know, post that assignment. Good heavens, I hope they don't.
Yeah, that would be really tacky.
Listen, eventually somebody has to take over the Dark Order. Somebody has to fill that role. We know it. It feels bad talking about it. But storyline sense, unless you're going to disband that unit, it's going to happen. So somebody is going to take, you know, the heat of the internet saying that AEW, you know, is replacing Brody Lee. We know it's going to happen. And whoever that poor guy's pigeonholed, I hope it's not Eric Rowan, who, you know, hopefully would have more sense than to do that to his friend. But one thing about Rowan, he may not be contracted, but man, he was emotional in that ring. He came in with a sign, you know, rest in peace with it for his friend and all that stuff, and he missed him. And he, I mean, tears were seriously flowing. And I mean, you could tell that there was a real bond with those two. And that really made my lip quiver when I saw that, I'll tell you that. But boy, Eric Rowan in his downtime certainly hasn't been hitting the gym. He must have took a right turn at Burger King there, because boy is gaining some weight in them jeans.
Yeah, he's looking a little paunchy. So here's my thoughts on this. As I said, at this point, I don't think we need an Exalted One. Evil Uno's fine. Evil Uno can talk.
I agree.
Evil Uno can talk. Evil Uno should just be the leader of the group. Don't refer to him as the Exalted One. He's just Evil Uno. And he comes out in a suit, and he's the stick guy. He's let him be the manager that can take bumps. Let him be the guy that talks for the Dark Order. And send Stu Grayson on a singles tear. You know, maybe let him have a shot with the TNT title, or pair him up with one of the other Dark Order guys that came out of this looking like $1 million, and, you know, and let him have a tag team run. Let's just move on from the Exalted One thing. It's a horrible shame Brody Lee died. Nobody needs to step into that spot.
It would be career suicide, honestly. And you know what? It would be shame on the company too for doing such a thing. So move on from that angle. Let that die.
Yep.
Later.
To close out this entire segment, they shifted over to a package from Eddie Kingston, who shared his thoughts about Lee and how much he'll miss him. And he spoke directly to Lee's family through the camera. Just because I'm naturally an empathetic guy through just my personality and through training. Watching other people cry makes me cry, and I lost during Kingston's bit. I was like, oh, God.
Me too, because guess what? The guy is Eddie Kingston's a real guy. You know what I mean? He's a real deal. What you see, I think, personally, and I don't know the guy, but I feel like I know the guy, and I think that's half the battle when it comes to speaking on the mic. You get a feel who's real and who's not, who's reading from a script. And this guy was, I'm telling you, if you did not cry during that promo, you're not a human being, because, I mean, that literally had tears flowing down my face. And I was trying to lose some weight. I was on the elliptical trying to watch this thing, and I was a slobbery mess and almost fell down. So there you go.
All right, the next one was our token girls match. Anna 99J and Ty Conti, by the way, took on Dr. Britt Baker. And for those that don't know, she is in fact a dentist. And the bride-to-be, Penelope Ford, they defeated, the Dark Order gals defeated Dr. Britt Baker and Penelope Ford in 10 minutes, 4 seconds by submission. What'd you think of, I don't remember there being anything too embarrassing about this. Britt Baker is an okay worker. I haven't seen too much out of Penelope Ford. Ty Conti came out of NXT, and they were just jobbing her left and right, and I think that's why she left, not because she sucked or anything. What'd you think of this match?
Couldn't it be both?
Could be.
I think the Dark Order girls missed a lesson or two in the ring. I think they still they don't have the polish or the shine. The other two girls, Penelope and Britt Baker, seem to have their act together, but lots of transition. And this was about a tribute show. So this is going to get a little bit of a pass, but I'm not going to come out there and say this was a good match. It was the right decision putting the Dark Order girls over. And you know what? Why not? They're a pair of, of brand new talent. They're good looking girls, and I think they can get over. And I think, having two, a heel tag team, under the Dark Order guys is good. And I always wanted that from the Wyatt family in different factions, Why don't we have a Wyatt family girl or a collection of girls? You know what I mean? They never, ever went down that street. I always wanted to see a Sister Abigail. And we get to see it play out here in the Dark Order. And, I just think it's cool as hell. I thought the girls looked great. But it's just that, if we're criticizing the wrestling wasn't beautiful in this match. It was probably the worst match on the card. But again, tribute show. It's not an excuse. It was just a little messy for me.
Yeah, and this one also had a weird ending. Again, I think back to, the Owen Hart show. I think back to the show after Eddie died. I don't necessarily like talking about the Chris Benoit one because, in retrospect, bad taste. They didn't know he ended up getting brain damage.
There were also no matches that night either.
Okay.
We didn't get matches that night either. We just got a bunch of old Benoit matches.
Okay. Anyway, I kind of just pass over the Benoit thing. But I think back to Owen Hart and Eddie Guerrero, and it was just straight matches. There were no angles that night. I especially remember the Owen Hart one because at the end, Steve Austin just gave a salute. Like everything just stopped, and it was a straight wrestling show. And it's actually kind of one of my favorite Raws from back then. Weird that that had to happen for that to happen. But sometimes I just want to see wrestling, and that's what it was. And I kind of was hoping that's what they would do here. I don't mind the Eric Rowan run-in because it served the purpose of him coming out there to send his, to wish his friend, to pay tribute to his friend and all of that. After this, Britt Baker went into, a whole thing about how there's a conspiracy against... She went into her gimmick, basically. Her thing is if she loses, it's a conspiracy against her, her stupid heel bullshit. And then she got attacked by Thunder Rosa. And I'm like, you're paying tribute to Brody Lee. Why are you doing this? Why are you reminding us that this is a bullshit wrestling program?
it seemed out of place. It did. And, she literally went from, sloppy Terry, we're going to miss you, to right into evil dentist mode,
Right.
It was kind of weird. And, even having Thunder Rosa come out there, it didn't suit the style of the program. But you know what? We still got to do angles, so I guess why not? I don't know.
If you're going to do that, then they should have made it a six-gal tag and have Thunder Rosa be on the team with...
Dark Order.
With a Dark Order, yeah.
It would fit. They've been perfect.
It's definitely one of those moments where I was like, you guys do okay, but you still don't under... As I've said before, you guys don't know when to stop.
Yeah, like, exactly. Oh, you're right.
I really wish there was an adult running AEW. An adult who understands wrestling.
Oh, there's one, and he loves himself. But we'll get into that a bit later. We're saving that one. We're
coming soon. All right. Chris Jericho shared a story about Brody Lee from when they were in Saudi Arabia together, and he said Brody spent the last 6 months of his career proving he was a main event star. Okay.
So this one, I'm gonna tackle this one because this one was the most empty out of all the promos. So Chris Benoit, oh my God, I can't get that guy out of my head. Stop, please. Chris Jericho came on and he's talking about Brody Lee, and it's clear he didn't have much of a connection with him because he had really no stories from WWE, despite sharing a locker room with him for several months or years even. But he really just told a story about, you know, his dog warming up to him when he came to his house.
How dare you? How dare you? Chris Jericho is the most genuine person you're ever going to meet.
I think he was. I think he was genuine. I just don't think he had anything to say of anything.
He wasn't needed.
No, he was definitely not needed. But I think
the story he told was about how smart John Huber is.
Yeah,
like he talked about he thought there was a watermark on the ceiling of the room he was in Saudi Arabia, and he was like, no, that's a sign that points to Mecca. See, John Huber knew lots of things about everything. Isn't he a wonderful guy? I told him that story in 10 seconds.
Right. but I honestly think that's probably all he knows about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
remember that time you told me the story about Mecca? That was cool.
I can only imagine what was going on 5 minutes before they shot that, where it's like Chris Jericho's walking through. Oh, hey, come in here. You worked with John when you guys were up north. Can you go ahead and say something on camera? I barely knew the guy. Chris, you're the only person anyone knows on this show. NBA fans think you're fat. Get on camera. Say something nice. He's like, there was this one time in Saudi Arabia. That's how it comes across.
Oh my God. It was an empty tribute there.
Like, yeah.
You know, like Jericho didn't say nothing bad. Let's be fair. He told a nice little humorous story. It was just, there was no content there. You contrast that to Eddie Kingston and even John Moxley, and there's just no air.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Like it was done at gunpoint because he had to. And he came and he said the first thing he could think of because clearly he had nothing else.
It was like Edge during the Eddie Guerrero tribute. It was all just, I was around Eddie and shoved me in a locker.
We met.
John was a man who had 2 feet and 2 legs. I often saw him walking places, and it made me think.
I never saw him with his shoes off, though, so I can't confirm.
And it made me think that walking is good. And John is good. Can I go now?
We're going to hell. Okay, we're good. That's hilarious.
The main event saw Team Taz, Ricky Starks, Brian Cage, and Powerhouse Hobbs, who now snarls like he has a hair lip. Can we not?
I hate the snarl. Stop doing it.
Can we not fucking do that anymore, Powerhouse Hobbs? You look like you're having some sort of a stroke.
It is really glaring. It's terrible.
Yeah, like, he doesn't look mean or intimidating. I work with people who have committed crimes, and they look perfectly intimidating without doing the hair lip snarl. Cut it out.
Yes, and I bet you Taz is just fucking with him, too. Oh, go out there, kid. You know, go out there and do the snarl. They love the snarl. Go out and do the snarl. Yeah. He goes out and they make fun of him in the back room. Look at this idiot doing the snarl.
His mouth looks like The Rock's eyebrow. It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's horrible.
Anyway, they took on the team of the mashed up mix of a team of Preston 10 Vance, the executive president, vice president, whatever the hell he calls himself, Cody Rhodes.
Oh, the real exalted one. Go ahead.
Yes. And Tony Khan's favorite wrestler, Orange Cassidy. And this ended with Cody Rhodes, Orange Cassidy, and 10 defeating Team Taz again in 11 minutes and 35 seconds. Like, I'm not going to bitch too much that Team Taz took a loss on a tribute show against the guys that are winning matches all night long. But Jesus, Team Taz, you know, awesome-looking, powerful, muscular wrestler types can't buy a fucking win. It's irritating.
But listen, you know why they can't buy a win? Because they're dealing with the booker of AEW, baby. He doesn't fall too far from the tree, daddy. We're going to book ourselves in the main event.
With the... All right, so...
Jihan, unload.
Hang on a second here. Let's talk about the wrestling before Sheehan shoots Cody Rhodes in the head. not that I'm saying that's a bad thing. I'm just, you know, there's an order to this. So this was a fun match. This was a high energy match. 10 Preston Vance came out looking like a star. You know, the problem is he wears like the lucha mask and everything. So like I don't. Like he has to unmask now, doesn't he? To make use of this guy, they have to like push him hard and take the damn mask off and give him a personality. Because if he's just faceless Dark Order guy, this is gonna fade really fast. But he came out of this looking like a million bucks, and this was a really really fun match and a really good match to end the night with. What do you call it? Cassidy, Cody, and 10 took turns hitting their finishers on Starks to get the win. 10 hugged his partners and threw up the Dark Order symbol before Team Taz came to get their heat back. They decimated everyone before the lights dropped and out came Darby Allin, who was soon joined by the sheriff of the AEW locker room, Sting! It's Sting! Ah! Sting! Is that how you do it? Oh! Is that right, Bailey? Did I do it right?
And then it began snowing.
Well, that might have been a natural phenomenon. It was Jacksonville in January.
But they kept showing the stupid snow machine. You're like, what? What are you doing?
Did Wildcat Willie turn the switch?
They were literally showing snow blowing out of the snow machine. You talk about breaking down the fourth wall. Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Bailey, the match, and just the match, please. Your thoughts.
Okay. No, the match, listen... The match, you could tell this was a main event match. I mean, all these guys are seasoned veterans. There was no sloppiness. Well choreographed. I mean, Ricky Starks, let's talk about him. You talk about a guy who can wrestle anyone with any style and come out looking like $1 million. This guy is money. I'm telling you right now. He belongs to the NWA, but he is, he is a star on the horizon. He's excellent. He's got their charisma. I mean, making a wonder that he took him on Team Taz. He's amazing. Then you got the Snarl himself, Powerhouse Hobbs, which, you know, he's more fat than bulk and, like, muscular. I don't know what his deal is, but I still dig him. And Brian Cage...
He has a smaller frame than Mark Henry, but he's built like Mark Henry.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the entire team. Now, listen, Darby Allin really gets on my nerves. I can't stand seeing the guy come down. But I still like Sting. Part of me, my childhood, just every time I see him come out with the bat, I'm like, woo, it's Sting. And he really does nothing so far. But, you know, I still get excited. You know what I mean? Part of me still wants Surfer Sting to come out. Why? Why, God, can't we have Surfer Sting for one night? Doing his, ow! You know, all that shit. I love that stuff. I don't know. Anyway, bottom line, it was a good match. The guy 10 went over, and like you said, man, this guy looks like $1 million. He's got the body, he's got the talent.
He's not 3 feet tall.
But what does he look like under that mask? Who is it? We don't know.
I might have to pull up a picture because I'm about to turn the show over to Chris Sheehan, who's going to do the Jim Cornette bit from Raw in the late 90s.
Oh man!
God damn!
Warning! Parental advisory suggested for the next content.
Oh, it's not going to be that. It's not going to be that extreme here. I just this is the scene that I saw first, which sucks because it sounds like I missed out on a heartfelt show because this is the scene that I saw first. Now, before I get started here, is the camera on me? Is the camera on me? Because I mean, I'm here. But I want the camera on me. I don't care who died. I don't care about anything. Just make sure the camera is focused on me. I took improv classes all fucking day to learn how to cry on cue. Now, turn around for a second so I can pull a nose hair. Okay, now I'm going to act like I'm really mad at myself for wanting to cry. But then I'm going to cry. Because this is all about me. This show is all about me. This is my tribute. This is all about Cody. All about Cody. Just like this entire promotion. It's all about me. Nobody else matters. Nobody else counts for a damn. It's all about me. Make sure the camera's on me. It's on me, right? Okay. It's a shame that someone passed away, but this is all about me. You know that, right? You know that. There's a guy in the back, this like creepy-faced motherfucker in the back who's spending his daddy's money, who really likes me. So this is all about me. So make sure the camera is on me, god damn it. That was the scene I saw first, so I didn't watch the rest of the show.
You're right. So he really had to dig deep to pull those tears out. And when you
what
say
a
like
piece of shit.
He went through about 7 facial contortions trying to pull that tear from the very bottom of his feet to the top of his body. Like he was purging that fucking tear.
Yeah, it's like
forever to
percolate.
Like
he didn't need to do it because in trying to do it and having to fight to do it, it only made it more apparent that he didn't give a shit.
The mad face was the tipper. I was like, okay,
oh,
this
fuck
is
that.
Complete phoniness here. I will 100% agree with you.
Oh, it was God.
That was like Chris Jericho doing his Mecca story. Like you knew that this was orchestrated. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Not genuine whatsoever.
And that's how we're starting to close out the show. It's like all the focus is off the man who we tragically lost and onto Cody fucking Rhodes.
Well, listen,
sucks.
So I'm gonna somewhat defend this because there's a certain cadence that you have to set your show off. You know what I mean? Disingenuous, yes. On paper, did he follow the proper protocols and steps? You know, bring his wife in, bring the CEO of the company in, do the little tribute, get the little hug, you know, retire the boots. All that stuff is textbook tribute. You know what I mean? This is exactly what a tribute should be without the heart. Like, where was the genuineness with Cody Rhodes? It just wasn't
there. Why didn't we have Moxley close out the show? Why didn't we have someone who actually gives a shit close out the show? Why didn't we have Rowan run out to close the show?
Right on
it would have been more heartfelt. It would have been more genuine. It would have meant more.
Right on the money.
We talk about how this show is an escape from the week to week, right? This is something that's going to be in its own. This is Earth 2, right? This doesn't count as far as anything else is concerned because this is a tragic situation. This is an unforeseen situation. This is Earth 2. It doesn't matter who goes over here. It doesn't matter who takes a loss here. This is a show in celebration and in tribute of someone we tragically lost. And yet, the takeaway is, oh yeah, Cody's the boss.
Yes.
Fuck that. Fuck him. Fuck this company.
We told you.
And Tony Khan signing Brody's son. Look at me, guys. Look at me. Look at what a nice guy I am.
Can we compartmentalize that? Because, here's what I'm going to say to you. They could have just quietly set aside a fund and says,
they should have.
Pay out Brody's contract, or you guys will, you know, for till your youngest turns 18, we will give you the equivalent of survivors, a Social Security survivors fund. I don't know if people know this, but if you lose a parent and you file through Social Security, you get a check from the government until you turn into an adult. At least in the United States, I don't know. In Canada, they send you maple syrup. I have no idea.
Oh no! They pay you, your kids, the guy next door. Everybody gets paid in Canada.
Okay, just a plane drives by and just drops money sacks.
Here's cash for you. We don't know what for. Someone's going to die sometime.
They chose. I hear what I think you're about to say. Saying, Sheehan, I get it. Like, there's a way to do things to where you come off kind of classy and dignified, and then there's the same thing, but only you're doing it like a clown and making it about you.
AEW is the internet. AEW is the internet.
It is.
You see people on YouTube, it's like, hey, get the camera on. I'm going to give this homeless guy money, but I want it on camera so I can put it online and people can see what a good guy I am.
Exactly.
It's bullshit.
Like, the WWE does a lot with charities, and people have complained that if it it doesn't matter, and it makes the WWE look tacky because they advertise it, except that all companies advertise it in some way, shape, or form. To the extent that they advertise it and the way that they advertise it changes from company to company, but, you know, there are plenty of companies that, to one level or another, you know, somewhat quietly to somewhat loudly, donate to charities, make do charitable events, take care of people, etc. So, like, the fact that AEW is like, we're going to take care of this family, I'm okay with. The signing the kid to a contract, it's heart's in the right place, a bit gimmicky, if you ask me. That's
we
kind
need
of
adults
my take
to run
on
this
it.
Company.
Yeah,
there needs to be adults in charge here instead of people running with emotion trying to get the cheap Twitter pop, because that's all it is.
But I think it was it's also like, but I think it was also, you know, like the poor kid lost his dad and everyone kind of doing backflips to make the kid feel comfortable, and yeah. It's like, okay. You know, it's like they don't know when to, again, they don't know when to stop. So it's like, here's money, here's a tribute, mm-hmm. here's all these nice things. And what else can we do to make this kid feel special? And it's like, I don't want to criticize that because you're criticizing making a kid feel special, which seems wrong. But on the other hand, like, you could have just given the family money, done the show, and called it a day. You know, what else can this... Like, did you see the thing with Mark... And again, I don't want to sound hypercritical, but did you see the thing with the kid Marco Stunt, who I think he's taller than Marco Stunt?
Yes.
I don't know what a Marco Stunt is.
I sent you the video from Effie's Big Gay Brunch. Don't tell me you don't know what a Marco Stunt is.
Did you send that to me?
Yes, I sent it to both
What did
of
they
you.
Do?
That was the one where him and he was. I told Bailey about this. Didn't we have this conversation?
Might have been the wrong Chris.
Maybe
I don't know that we're real friends. That you would send me the big gay stuff.
Oh, trust me. Oh, I send all my friends big gay things. But so Effie's Big Gay Brunch, after the Twink Gauntlet, they had Effie versus the world's greatest Twink, and out came Marco Stunt, and there were. My wife and kids are home. There were dildos involved. There was all there was all kinds of sexual nonsense happening. And I sent you the highlights of Effie's Big Gay Brunch, which I still think we should talk about. But
I don't think you did.
Maybe you blocked it out.
That's a possibility.
It is all that and a rubber dung.
All right, Bailey. For Sheehan clearly didn't see it because he doesn't know what a Marco Stunt is, and he's probably better off for it. But explain to him what happened since you watched Dark. Explain to him the cosplay fantasy
thing. Oh, didn't
they
make the kid world champion or some shit?
I don't care about that. The thing he did with Marco Stunt is the one that made me raise the eyebrow. Bailey, take it away.
Wait a second. What are we talking about here? Are you talking about the one where he confronted Marco Stunt, like backstage?
No, wasn't this in the middle of the ring?
Do tell me about this. I don't know if I've seen this.
Okay.
So there's a backstage segment that was also filmed. That's the one I'm talking about, where he just comes in, basically, you know, gets in the face of Marco Stunt. But anyway, go ahead. Maybe
that's what it was, but I thought it was in the ring. When I saw pictures of it, I thought it was in the ring, but who knows? Okay. So Brody Lee Jr. confronts Marco Stunt in AEW Dark. Dude, there's ropes here. It's in the ring. Brody Lee Jr., also known as Dark Order member Negative One, has really been making an impact on AEW as of late. On this week's AEW Dark, he confronted Marco Stunt. Dude, they're literally like an inch apart in height.
They are.
It's horrible. Fire Marco Stunt now, today, before the end of this podcast. Anyway, he confronted Marco Stunt and was involved in a tense pull apart.
Isn't this kid like nine?
He's nine!
Aren't there laws against that kind of shit?
Negative One would later cut a promo on Luther and lead his Dark Order teammates to the ring as well. Marco Stunt came to the ring as Excalibur explained on commentary that a heated rivalry between him and Negative One has been building. Stunt was immediately interrupted by the Dark Order member, who still hasn't been alive for a full decade yet. Negative one. This is coming from Scoops, by the way. Negative one explained to Marco that when he's older and the two of them wrestle, he'll be much taller. Dude, you'll be taller in a week when puberty hits.
Okay, so I saw that part. I did see that. And I did see the shove and the pull apart. That was hilarious.
Oh my, I sent you guys in our Twitter chat, our private Twitter chat, a picture of Vance Preston, who, I'm not gay, but I'd bang that guy. Why isn't he champion? He's a hot blonde. He's 6'2", muscular, and has Hollywood good looks. Throw him all the fucking titles. Why is he in a mask?
I thought that was Rene Dupree.
All right. I gotta send you guys this fucking video. This is ridiculous. Okay, so while I send you guys this video of Negative One versus Marco's stunt, which, Sheehan, you have to watch this just to see if you can stop yourself from pulling your eyes out.
Okay, I'll try.
Bailey, go ahead and give me your final words here. Are we done? Do we want to? Is there anything left to say about what a shitty person Cody Rhodes is, or anything positive to say about this tribute?
Oh, I don't know that he's a shitty person per se. I just think this was a shitty thing to do, making it all about him when this really should have just been left to speak for itself.
Yes, agreed.
Misdirecting from the man that we tragically lost, from, you know, with his family there. You know, God bless him. It's all about Cody, and it always will be.
Yeah,
that got under my skin.
That part did suck. There's no question about that. But in regards to being a tribute show, I think that it hit every check in the box. I mean, I think that they honored his name. I think that they honored his family. I think they had a great tribute package.
What are you doing?
All the people that
I'm sorry, I left a gentleman alone.
Spotlighted in like a professional manner. Like, listen, if WWE tries to take every opportunity in the world to like bury people, if you're in your hometown, guaranteed you're getting something stuck up your ass and you're taking the pinfall. You know what I mean? They go out of their way to embarrass their talent when it comes to their, you know, their homeland or something special about them. I think they did a really, really good job here with this tribute. I really don't have any problem with the content and all that stuff. We can say what you want about matches and all that stuff. Outside of the Cody Rhodes and the Chris Jericho promo being like super disingenuous, I think they hit all the boxes.
Okay. Sheehan, anything else before we move on?
No. It was a fine show from what it sounded like. I wish I would have seen it in the order it was meant to be seen, because then I just would have been disgusted at the end. It sounded like 90 to 95% of the people actually were genuine. And like Bailey said, matches don't matter in this sort of a situation. This is just, the matches facilitate everything else and celebrate what Huber dedicated his life to. You know, it's a, like I said, I wish I would have seen it from the start. It's just a shame that the scene that I saw was the scene that everybody was pushing, which was the Cody Rhodes bullshit.
Man, oh, Mark, I just took a look at Preston Vance there on the Twitter.
Right?
He's a pretty good looking boy. I would actually watch you do him.
See?
We all have our fetishes, right?
I mean, that's not gay or nothing. I mean, if I had to give a prison blowjob, it's fine. He's a good-looking man. There are worse options out there.
But no, this little man with the wife beater on?
No, that's yeah, that's Marco Stunt.
Okay. I'm watching this video you sent here, and he's holding the microphone like he's The Rock.
Of course, we all
Melissa,
do.
No, damn it!
Oh God.
Hang on, come here.
This kid ain't wearing a shirt.
So this is what we're laughing about. So this is one of Brody Lee's sons confronting known international superstar wrestler Marco Stunt.
Is this like child exploitation or something? For both of them.
That's Marco Stunt, right?
This podcast is on the
pipe. He's the little prehistoric dude, right?
Yes, he's the little prehistoric dude. That's correct.
Is that Luke Perry's
Melissa
kid?
Gets it. She gets it.
No, Luke. Well, I don't know. We're further behind in the video than you are. I don't know if Luke Perry came out in this. But yeah, here comes Chip.
I'm seeing them push each other, and
Okay, so Marco stunned.
Oh, and Cody's the first one in the ring because he's
international wrestling superstar is about to be confronted by a 9-year-old child.
You realize our daughter is older than this kid.
And taller than Marco's stunt. Look at this. This is wrestling. This was aired.
Hold on. You know what's scary though? They really are, like, the size is not that different.
That's what I'm saying. He's a full grown man who was involved in a sexual wrestling match.
No, he's a half grown man.
There's a bigger height difference than you're giving credit for. But it's like the size buildup is like not far off from each other.
First no.
of all, who would let a 9-year-old wrestle a full-grown man?
His dad is a wrestler.
No, she's right. Who would let a 9-year-old in the ring with an actual wrestler?
Well, look, Cody's coming to save the day.
Yes.
and they're gone here. And Cody is the one in focus. Great.
All right,
we're going shopping.
All right.
Imagine them doing this in WWE? Could you imagine that?
Oh, they would be
crucified.
The internet would set things on fire and steal lecterns and get arrested in Pinellas County. Too soon?
$3 now for information for the Cody Rhodes fan club. Right now.
Quarterly newsletter.
All right. Well, that was fun. Are we ready to talk about serious wrestling? Are we ready to talk about serious wrestling now? I think we are.
Oh, Dextrosity running wild.
All right, the first NXT Wednesday night special, New Year's Evil, took place on January 6th from the WWE Capital Wrestling Center. Yeah. There we go.
I have a question. Can the Canadian have a simple question?
Go on.
How long was your episode of NXT?
Oh, I don't know. I watched it live, but I was like a half an hour behind.
Okay. How long was it? What do you guys get in the U.S.? Because I feel that I got a butchered version on the Canadian feed.
You might have lucked out then.
I got a 1-hour episode with 3 matches.
No.
We got something longer than that.
Yeah,
we
no.
got 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was 6 matches.
Did you watch the Hulu version or...
No,
they butcher the Hulu version.
It's the one that they broadcast on Canadian television. It was literally 1 hour long. I got 3 matches.
Oh.
There was a lot of dirty stuff in there that I know the Canadian TV cuts out, right? Wasn't that during the Attitude Era?
Oh, yeah. I got Archer and Cross. I got Ripley and the other missus. And I had the main event, Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor. Those are the only 3 matches I've seen.
You didn't get Raquel Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley.
Oh, yeah, Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez. I did get those. Were the 3 matches? Karrion Kross.
Oh, you missed out on Escobar then.
Yes. No, I don't know if I missed out, but I did.
No, you didn't.
So I can only speak of 3 matches. But go ahead, let's roll.
Okay, so just to make sure I got you, Karrion Kross versus Damian Priest. You got the Correct. Ladies Last Man Standing, and you got Balor versus O'Reilly.
You got it.
You did not get The Way versus Shotzi and Kushida?
I did not.
Okay.
Oh, poor guy. Can the simple transplanted New Yorker have a question?
This isn't a press conference. Just go.
What was evil about this? Why is it called New Year's Evil? Is it just a funny play on words, or does it actually mean anything?
Funny play on words.
Is Dexter Loomis evil?
Well, I think he is. He's very evil.
I know he's a sexual deviant from the looks of it, but evil. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like very, very try hard sort of '90s shit. It's New Year's evil, but I digress.
Funny.
I was not very excited for this.
You know, they used Dexter Loomis right though. He doesn't. He already doesn't
talk. He didn't do shit.
He turned on the lights. My favorite part was they had him on commentary. Just am I? Didn't they do this with Orange Cassidy also, Bailey? Where it's just like, we have Orange Cassidy here, and he would like give a thumbs up periodically.
He gives the limp dick thumbs up. Yep, that's it.
Terrific. Anyway, so New Year's Evil starts off with the returning Karrion Kross, who's back from getting himself injured. Oh, real quick, so Keith Lee in the past month or so, there was a story about how Keith Lee, Otis, and other big fatties got sent Patty, back, yeah. got sent back to the performance center for some seasoning. They needed some. They were bland and needed some seasoning.
Mm-hmm. And, paprika.
And I apparently tweak the nipples of wrestling Twitter, who are, as the kids
They're
would say,
easy to tweak.
They are, as the kids would say, they are Keith Lee stans. Now,
the fuck does that mean?
A stan is somebody that you're like a fan of, you know, obsessively. So
why
Bailey,
you just say fan.
Because the kids say stans. I'm trying to be hip and cool and now and there. See,
I know. I just had a birthday a couple weeks ago, but I feel like it aged me like 50 years. How?
Welcome to Old Men Hate Wrestling.
Oh God,
hey,
and
that's
everything.
A great name for the show. Rebrand.
Bailey Sheehan, help
Get
me out
of
here.
Our ring.
As much as people love the shit out of Keith Lee, and apparently get on, you know, get in line that go around the block to take turns blowing this fella. Didn't he also injure a bunch of people? Isn't he like a big fat sloppy slob who injures people? The least of which was Karrion Kross, and you know when he won the fucking title off the guy. Correct me if I'm wrong.
There's no correcting needed. You are 100% right on the Karrion Kross thing.
Okay, mm-hmm. But didn't he injure other people too? Like, you know, isn't he known for being a bit stiff? Being not, I wouldn't say reckless. That's Nia Jax. But like,
first when he got called up, he was berated for the first couple of weeks for being super stiff in the ring. It was okay. One of those reports on the Observer and all that stuff that he's got heat because he's too stiff and indie.
Is he in the doghouse too?
I think so. I think his, you tell me. I mean, he fought everybody's favorite, Mr. Money. I mean, the glowing heavyweight champion of the world, Drew Swordsmith motherfucking McIntyre on Raw. And he lost.
What did they call, what was it? I thought his last name was something different.
Who? Who's Drew McIntyre?
Drew. Yeah, I thought he had a different
Galloway.
Last name. No. I thought Adam Pearce had called him something different.
Jeff McFarlane? I don't know. Jeff Harvey?
Oh, no, he goes Mac and Fart.
Right. So to move this forward, I wrote on Twitter, when I saw the headline about they're sending Keith Lee back to the performance center for seasoning, I was like, oh, good, maybe he'll learn not to injure people. Because he injured people. And I got, like, attacked on Twitter because of it. It's like somebody wrote back, you know, like, stupidest thing ever said on the internet and all this. Like, I got, like, a bunch of remarks about what an asshole I am. And I'm like, but he injured people. I was
looking at the comments. One guy's here, I think it's Lee Keith. Another one is Keith L. they're all upset.
All right, moving on. So Karrion Kross, off his, coming back from his injury, immediately put in a feud with Damian Priest, who is just on the verge of being called up to NXT, so of course he gets to be jobbed out. These guys had a pretty stiff, brutal, violent match. It went for 15 minutes and 30 seconds. It looked like they were killing each other in there. Karrion Kross is like one of my favorite wrestlers right now, and I was sad that he went off TV so quickly. I'm glad to see him back. I'm hoping him and Finn Balor wrestle soon, and the title goes back on him. If he like doesn't get injured severely again and can actually have a go for a while, and they don't bury the poor bastard, he has got money written all over him. Hopefully they don't make him come to the ring with swords and he doesn't become champion during a pandemic. Other than that, like, I see nothing but good things for Karrion Kross. Him and Damian Priest put on a great match. What did you think, Sheehan?
That was a really good match. I think it might have went on a little too long. I'm thinking back to Kross's match with Ciampa, which was like a statement match. Like, he just beat the shit out of Ciampa. Here it was more even. If we are losing Priest to the main roster, there's no reason to have it so even. But it went on maybe a little bit too long, but it was very hard hitting, very physical. I thought it was a really good match.
Bailey?
Yeah, I tell you what, I enjoyed the match. It was pretty evident, though, that especially with the ending, I mean, they just buried Damian Priest here. You know what I mean? Like, there was no, slip up win. There was no you know, oh, he just barely beat Damian Priest. No, he polished Damian Priest off and, like, put the nail in the coffin, man. I mean, it was a one-sided affair. Somewhere Vince McMahon is in the corner and he's beating off the Scarlet. I mean, he just loves that girl. He couldn't wait to get her back. Oh, my God, that Scarlet. Look at her ass. For fuck's sake. I mean, it was great. These two are money 100% for NXT, and I agree with you 100%. They need to get the belt off of Balor and back on this guy because he's a good signature top heel, and that's what they're desperately in need of. And you know what? A little bit of slut out of the slut closet is perfect too. So it's good to see a bit of skin back on TV.
The next one was your featured luchador match of the evening. Santos Escobar defeated Gran First of all, that's my racket.
I'm getting my CPAP machine right now.
Don't get old, children. I have one, too. Santos Escobar defeated Gran Metalik of the Lucha House Party, who got taken off the main roster and nobody noticed or cared. He beat him in 12 minutes, 28 seconds. I mean, I think they went out of their way to have the Super Lucha match. Like, that was the one thing I was noticing about this was, like, if I didn't pay close enough attention and didn't know I was watching NXT, you could have convinced me this was AAA. They went full on, like, fuck it, nobody's watching. Nobody's telling us what to do. Right. This is NXT. I mean, not nobody's watching, like, fans. I mean, nobody from management is watching this. So we can,
I was barely watching.
Yeah, there you go. So it's like, we can have a lucha match and have fun with this and do what comes naturally to us, and nobody will yell at us, and it doesn't matter because we only speak Spanish. They had a it was a, you know, if you like lucha, if you like, you know, gymnastics and nobody sells anything and it's a lot of flippity doos, then this was fine. And the one guy they think that can hold the cruiserweight title that has any interest to him won the match. Bailey, no, you didn't watch this. Fucking Sheehan.
Oh, you lucky guy, you didn't get to watch this.
Justin Trudeau said no.
And he was right to do so. He gets my vote. I don't know if I can send in a ballot up there like people can hear. I don't know. But
he said no. But, that's French.
No. But yeah. This was a boring match. Escobar is boring.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't Jiz Scott again, because he's even more boring. But I don't... The house party guys, they're still on Raw. They were on Raw during the big Legends night. They had like 5 seconds in the backstage with Melina, who showed up for 5 seconds of Legends night. I don't know what the point is. Do they not have anybody else? Do they not have any cruiserweights? Where the hell's Drake Maverick? I mean, where's anybody? Just put the belt on a dog. Something that's interesting. Because Escobar is not interesting. He's got two guys with him who are not interesting. The Lucha House Party is not interesting. This entire situation is not interesting.
So what you're saying is that you didn't find it interesting.
I did not find it interesting. I found it about as interesting as people find my rant right now, which is not very. This is boring shit. And it seems like the week never changes in the cruiserweight division. It's always the same shit over and over and over again. And I don't see it changing, unfortunately.
We had a squash
match. Who won the match? Was it Escobar, right?
It was Escobar, yeah.
There you go.
All right, the next one was... So, speaking of fast-forwarding through things, most weeks when I watch NXT, they're not labeled, so I don't have to pay that close attention to them. And I have fast-forwarded through every single one of these fucking Asian snuff film bits that they've been doing with Boa and Xia Li. So I kind of know what's happening because Jim Cornette talks about it. Apparently there's a grandmaster and he's torturing them, and she gets some light tickle torture. Boa gets some, like, you know, real BDSM type stuff happening to him. And I guess the big payoff here was now Xia Li, who I kept, every time I looked at her, I wanted to call her Chun-Li. Like, she's doing, like, a Street Fighter gimmick, basically. She's, you know, just Asian fucking ass-kicking chick. But not, like, cool, like, Io Shirai, who has a personality and is fun to watch and can actually wrestle. This one, it was, again, they just gimmicked her up a bit. And then she came in and she squashed this girl, Katrina Cortez, and thankfully it was a squash in 1 minute and 30 seconds. And who gives a shit? Like, like, Sheehan, back me up here. Her gimmick is she does, like, martial arts poses. That's all I got out of that match.
Right, she got fans, right? Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And was she, like, if we're to buy into this gimmick, she was, like, kidnapped not too long ago, right?
Yes.
Like, she was abducted and put into a guinea pig film, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, for weeks, for weeks they've been doing these, like, poorly lit,
dripping candle wax on them. I mean,
BDSM films.
This is like a 21st century Dungeon of Doom here, where they're reporting to, you know, the master. You know, and we still don't have a reason to care about them.
Like, you know,
she was abducted, put into torture, and now she's just back.
Not to sound like Jim Cornette or anything, but it does really stretch credulity when you are filming
a crime.
Yeah, when you have, like, legit camera crews filming a crime. Like, it'd be one thing if these segments were, you know, to, like, shown on cell phone footage or something, or so, you know, like, you know, there's a guy with a handheld cam and you catch him. Yeah,
whoever.
You catch him in the mirror, and it's like, so you know that, like, then at least it's woven into the story that this is kind of like a found footage thing of a crime that's happening, and the police aren't involved because you don't know where these people are. Oh no, this crazy person keeps sending in films of them beating up these two Asian people.
This is like avant-garde filming with, like, drum beats in the background.
Right. It has a soundtrack and everything.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, we still don't give a shit.
Well, that's the thing. I might have cared if they put some, like, believable production. You referenced the NWO. That's perfect. They made the NWO segments look like it was, like, mailed-in footage shot on a camcorder. Because, you know, bootleg footage. Because they weren't part of WCW. They were an invading rebel faction. They were a gang.
And they bought their time on the air. Yeah.
Right. If you're not even going to, like, go to that level of a 20-year-old angle who already did this shit, and you're going to continue to do, like, clean production, clean movie production of your BDSM films, then I'm not going to care either.
Mm-hmm.
But at least the match was short.
They brought her out. They from torture, they put her in some new clothes, did her hair up. I mean, what?
She was torn down and rebuilt.
Yeah, they stopped at the salon and the boutique on the way back from torture.
I would have bought this whole thing had they, instead of doing it as Asian BDSM, if they had just done Pretty Woman segments. Like,
what?
Like, instead,
just like a clamshell with a nunchuck in it or something.
Like, if they're going to remake her, have her fall in love with a rich man, and he takes her shopping, and the saleswoman won't sell her a dress, and it's like, oh, but you have money.
Sorry.
Someone at WWE will see that movie in about 5 years.
Really do something with the gerbil and Richard Gere.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're going to not put any effort into this, at least make it fun with it.
Make us laugh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're making us do all the hard work, yeah.
I would love to see Xia Li in Pretty Woman. And for those keeping score, sure, at least I'm referencing a different movie and not Grease this time. Let's move on. All right, so this next one, Bailey, you actually got to see. And was this, like, not the hardest hitting fucking female match you've ever seen in your life? Holy shit. Raquel Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley beat the fuck out of each other.
Man, they did. And they were doing all kinds of, like, they almost overdid the spots. Like, there was so much chaos. They destroyed the entire center. They smashed every table that could be smashed. Every table. They used lockers. They went backstage. They went in the crowd. They did everything but wrestle a match. I mean, this was super violent. And they ended the match with, like, going down through, like, a pile of junk over offside of the stage, and poor old Gonzalez crawling out of a hole and finally getting the win. This was a barn burner, man. I loved it.
Yeah, this was super good.
And it was the final nail in Rhea Ripley, because that, just with, you know, Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley, I think this would probably be their last hurrah for both of them.
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion Rhea Ripley is going to win the Royal Rumble. But we'll get there when we get there. Yeah, this one was really good. It was probably my favorite match of the night, to be honest with you. I love the locker bit with Dakota Kai. But the thing I wanted to say before I turn it over to Sheehan was this really was like Godzilla versus King Kong. Like, this is probably one of the first and only times I've ever seen two women pull off, like, a big Haas match. Like, they're big girls to begin with. And we've seen, and like, Charlotte's, you know, a taller athletic girl, and I think Becky Lynch is somewhere around her height, but like, Sasha Banks is diminutive. You know, Bayley's not on the taller side either, you know, and a lot of the girls are even shorter than that. So like, Raquel Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley, even if they're not super tall, are still taller than most of the women on the roster and project themselves like fucking beasts, man. Like, you know, Bayley and I are going to talk about Hager and Wardlow when we talk about New Year's Smash. They come off like that on television, that level, and they tore it up. And the last thing I want to say, like, the late Larry Zonka was known for pointing out that if you have a blood feud, you don't start off with a crisp tie-up. Like, you don't start off with, like, catch-as-can wrestling. You start off with them wanting to brutalize each other, and that is exactly what these two women did. Like, finally, some decent psychology. They did this whole package on how they were best friends and road buddies, and they split up, and, you know, and now they hate each other, and it's time for the murder to happen. And they started off with, like, an ECW catfight. Basically, they were just rolling around on the mat punching each other, and I'm like, but yeah. If you hate somebody, you're not going to sit there and do a tie-up. You're going to rush at them, and it's just going to be hair pulling and fist punching. And I loved it. I can't say enough. I'm gushing about this match. This is like contender for match of the year for me to start off with. Sheehan?
Match of the night for sure. It was everything it needed to be. I did not like the ending because it felt a little too pro wrestling-y. It felt like we had this like barn burner of a fight. And then it just turned into like, okay, well, I'm going to slam you into the shadows to where we can't see where we landed. I mean, it's the Taz Bam Bam Bigelow thing from 20 years ago.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
That kind of lost me. Huh?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, okay. That kind of lost me there. But everything else I was enraptured. I thought it was a great physical battle here. I could have done without the best friend reveal because it feels like it came out of nowhere. I mean, they've been feuding for a long time now, but we haven't heard about their best friendship until like a couple weeks ago.
I don't think it was necessary.
I don't think it was necessary for this match either. I mean, but leading up to it, I mean, if they are best friends, then you'd probably mention it when they first crossed paths. They didn't think it was necessary then, so it shouldn't be necessary now either. It felt like an added, tacked on pro wrestling-y sort of thing. Yep. Instead of it being just two women who want to beat the crap out of each other, it's like, no, there's more to the story than that. It's like, well, how come we didn't know about that 6 months ago when they first started fighting? Felt weird, felt forced. And the ending, too, felt kind of forced. But then again, I mean, how do you top all the physicality? You kind of have to pull from the magic bag of pro wrestling and you know, a tower bomb someone straight to hell or whatever the hell it was. But match of the night for sure, and 90% of it was exactly what it needed to be.
So the next bit was The Way came out to do their brand of comedy, and they were and then they were interrupted by
it was Cody Rhodes.
Wow. I'm not wearing a shirt, but if I were, I'd be pulling on the collar. Eat your heart out, internet fans. So The Way did their brand of comedy, and they were interrupted by Shotzi and her tank, who then shot fucking poor Austin Theory at point blank range. I love the math involved in how they book people in the WWE. You know, I was talking before about Preston Vance, and I'm like, why is this hot motherfucker wearing a mask? Well, turn the page, change the channel, and we're over at the WWE, who's like, well, here's this hot motherfucker. He's built, he's young, he's super athletic, he's tall. How about we make him an asshole? All right. But let's worse than that, how about we make him a retarded asshole? But for why? Because Johnny Gargano needs a heater. There's 97, like, 8-foot tall guys on the NXT roster. Give him one of them. No. Let's take the guy who already looks like main event money and make him retarded. Okay. And let's put him in goofy shit and do goofy things to him. So no matter how hot he is, no matter how good he looks, no matter how great he wrestles, people will always associate him with, you were the clown that was the heater for the short indie guy that everyone loves that wears the Marvel cosplay outfits.
Is it me, or does Austin Theory look like a dollar store Finn Balor? Like, he could be his stunt double, like, just doing, like, you know, say, for example, if Finn Balor ever died and, like, did a casket match with Yokozuna and they had to raise him up on the Titantron, you know, it would be Austin Theory in the suit. You know what I mean? These guys are pretty close.
They are.
They could probably still use Marty Jannetty for that, right?
Honestly, I think if you put Austin Theory in a lineup with Jordan Devlin and Finn Balor, I don't know if you'd be able to tell them apart.
Yeah, you're right.
They could be like they could be the new, like, Von Erich triplets or some shit.
Except less horse-faced.
Oh!
Oh, no. I don't understand why they gave this bit to Austin Theory, but they shot Austin Theory in point blank with a tank was where I was going with this. Nice. And then Christian's favorite girl wrestler, Indy Hartwell. By the way, I now have you going, which way did she go, George, in my head constantly.
She doesn't know the way to the ring. They need to have her on one of those leashes that you have kids on, like at Disneyland. They need to incorporate that into the gimmick here. It's like, no, that's concession. Come on, we gotta get to the ring. Gotta get to the ring. No, that's where Wade Barrett sits. Come on. Because she just looks so damn clueless. And they don't play it up, but what are you gonna do?
So yeah, yes.
This segment sucked.
So the way and their brand of comedy, as I said, they were interrupted by Shotzi Blackheart, who shot Austin Theory point blank with a tank. She got into a hair-pulling match with Candice LeRae. Johnny Gargano went to attack her. That got interrupted by Kushida, who finally stopped looking like Marty McFly. And I don't understand what he's doing, but I guess when you throw on a loose-fitting tank top, that means you're, like, pissed off and a tough guy. But we got an impromptu match. This is where our host got involved. This is what his one duty that he performed besides turning the lights on. He drew a picture. Yeah, he rang a bell.
He drew a picture and rang a bell. Yeah.
That's right. Because he's the artist, right? So he drew a picture.
Torture.
And he rang a bell, and he made a match.
Oh, was he kidnapped by the same one who took Xia Li, since he is a tortured artist?
He might have been doing the torturing.
Oh, okay, that's a whole new level. Did he tie her up and put her on train tracks? Or was that the other guy?
So they had a match.
Extrusity knows so many different ways.
The Garganos versus Kushida and Shotzi Blackheart. This was less than 10 minutes, relatively inoffensive. I don't think Shotzi tripped over her own feet. I thought the match itself was, like, it was a fun comedy match of sorts, and you needed something to, like, you know, as we talked about with one of the previous pay-per-views, Sheehan, you need a cool-down match after you've just had a brutal match and you're about to have the main event. You need something in the middle. You need a little bit of bologna between the two pieces of bread to space things out so you don't exhaust the audience. And that's exactly what this was. This was fun, stupid fun, for no good reason other than to get Johnny Gargano on an episode of NXT with his wife and, you know,
cohorts.
Dumb cohorts. anything else about this?
No, it served its purpose. It was a light-up match, so it separated the two big fights, and did it well enough. I'm beyond exhausted with Gargano. No matter how many times they paint this guy, he looks the same, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what coat of paint, it's just like, okay, this dude's just stop. I'm just tired of it. It's you know, the guy who's like a senior in college but still hangs out in high school. You know, he still hangs out there in the parking lot to talk to people. It's like, dude, just go. Move on. You need to grow up. And he won't. So we're stuck with him.
Yeah. There's a hand. We were talking. Another group of guys and I were talking about how there are just a handful of people on NXT that are just never leaving NXT. They're always going to be in the middle to top of the card. They're never leaving. It defeats the purpose. Yeah, it really does. Like, they can't ever really refresh the roster because it's the same handful of guys staying at the top. And it's like, what is the point of all this? All right. Bailey, Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly are in a competition to see how many times they can hurt one another.
Yes. So this is the sequel to what I thought was one of the better matches that I've seen last year. Okay? And, you know, it had all the hallmarks. I couldn't wait to see, you know, a rematch between these two. And you think that they would, you know, they had a really tight, close contest the first time. And you'd think that they'd follow that up with, like, an even more aggressive match and, you know, even give Kyle O'Reilly some more hope spots to make it seem like he's getting that much closer. And they didn't do it. Not only did they not do it, they winded this match down. They broke it down to a bunch of, like, really, really slow mat wrestling. And I was really shocked because, you know, if you watch the first match and watch this one, they're two completely different matches. But this one just has not much going on. And he just taps them out at the end. Like, man, I was floored. I didn't know what the reason for this was. You know, you're trying to make a star in Kyle O'Reilly, a brand new single star. And do you think they did that here? I think they did in the first match. I think they took away his poker chips in this one. So I don't know. Not impressed.
I didn't think it was a bad match. I thought it was a weird match. It was like, okay, what are we going to do differently? We're not throwing a gimmick in for this. We're just having a basic rematch. What are we going to do differently this time? Well, how about if the thing that Kyle O'Reilly is selling is his jaw because he bit the ropes in order to get out of a hold?
Ugh.
And it was like, it definitely felt like they were reaching and it was a bit overthought, overcooked. Like, I feel like they were going for like a minimalist kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it was just poorly thought out. Like, it was an okay match, but like, it's kind of like telling Star Wars backwards. Like, you don't start with blowing up the Death Star and work your way to look, you know, Luke looking over the vista as the sun sets on Tatooine.
Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are we starting with, you know, like, why did we start with the big blow off and end with the beginning?
Yeah, it's like the Barton Church. Yeah. It's just. That's all I can tell you.
And it's like, I don't want to seem like hypercritical of the match itself, because I think, like, if you don't remember they had a first match, this one was okay. Weird. Yep. That the jaw thing was weird. The Finn Balor was selling his arm the whole time, and all I could think about was he probably legit, like, injured his arm, because these two klutzes can't stop injuring each other.
Exactly.
Like, Jim Cornette, like, just kind of blurted out on one of his shows recently. He was like, stop hitting me for real, you mark. And... And that's all I can think about with Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly. It's like, what can we do to make our matches stand out? What if we really hurt each other? Like, yeah. Like, and it's not, you know, in the strong style, like, you really chopping a guy. It's like, what if I put you in the hospital? Okay, well, I'll put you in the hospital, too, and we'll both be in the hospital, and we'll get match of the year.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not match of the year. It wasn't even match of the month. Not even match of the show. So I think this was the disappointment.
Yeah, like Karrion Kross, Damian Priest opened super strong. The girls had the best match of the night, and then this one ends with a dud by comparison.
Yep. Big time.
I almost would have preferred if they had ended the show with Kushida and Shotzi beating the way, because at least you're ending on kind of like a fun, you know, a fun note. Like, this one was kind of like, oh, these two guys are injured again?
Yep, I know.
What is this, a Clint Eastwood movie? Why does this have to end in depression? Sheehan, you have the final word on this match. Take me home, baby doll.
Lord, diminishing returns with this one. And pretty much echoing what you guys said here, they started out strong with their first match, and then this one felt like the build-up to that match. Total reverse booking here. Any shine that they gave to O'Reilly is dulled. I care less about Finn Balor than perhaps anybody on this roster. I don't know what the point of him being here is. It's not like he shows up every week either, which is something I'd usually give them credit for, like not having the champion on every week. But for the developmental, it feels like the champ should be there more often and be in action more often or just be in the mix more often. they've got Balor at this weird spot where he's like kind of above NXT, but he's representing NXT. Don't know where that really works. And they're not building anybody to get to replace him. And here we have O'Reilly, who looked like he was going to be $1 million going into this year, and it's just another loss, and it was a tap out loss. So don't know where they go from here. And this was a good match. I don't have any complaints about the match itself, but just the storytelling and the stakes and what comes next, I just don't know.
All right. That is our review of the Brody Lee tribute and NXT New Year's Evil. My middle name is Misery. The next time we'll be bringing you some wrestling will be myself and Bailey. We will be reviewing both nights of AEW New Year's Smash. And that'll come to you on January 14th. And then Bailey and I are back again to bring you Impact Presents Kenny Omega. No. Hard to Kill. That's coming to you on January 19th. And then all the boys in the band are getting back together to bring you... Chris Sheehan, tell them what's coming up here. We're going to do something called WWE Superstar Spectacle. What's a Superstar Spectacle, sir?
Well, it's either NXT India or WWE India. I've seen it called both things here, but they're opening up a new branch, a new brand, a new division. Not sure if it's going to be developmental or just another take of a main roster, but... it looks like we're getting a tournament on Republic Day, which is January 26th. And I see such stars as the Singh Brothers and Jinder Mahal are involved. So we'll take a look at that. We'll see how it goes. I don't know if there'll be a title at the end of it or if it's just like a Kuwaiti Cup sort of situation, but I guess we'll be there and we'll find out.
Well, I do hope Mansoor wins again.
Yes! More Mansoor, please!
I was hoping for Tiger Ali Singh to come back.
Oh,
he is the reigning Kuwaiti Cup champion, right?
Ooh.
Can we not have Muhammad Hassan? He needs rehabilitation.
Oh, no,
he's,
but
he's busy being a principal of a school.
Yeah. Oh.
He needs to be wearing like this giant wolf head and like no shirt and like a pair of khaki pants.
I understood that reference.
I don't. What is it?
It's one of the guys that Storm the Capitol.
Oh.
Of the six pictures that are making the rounds in a wag the dog fashion, he's Mansoor. Not the guy that stole the lectern. He's the asshole standing in the middle of whatever room that is, and he's
my Twitter thinks I live in Japan, so I only get Japanese news.
You're better off. All right, so us podsmen who are totally respectful of other people's cultures will be bringing you this Indian show. WWE Superstar Spectacle. Yes, on January 28th. It'll be fantastic. And then we've got the Royal Rumble on the 31st, and we will be bringing that to you on February 2nd. The next night is AEW Beach Bash.
Holy cow.
And myself and... yes, sir. And myself and Chris Bailey will bring that to you Friday, February 5th. So... if you're enjoying this brand of wrestling commentary, you're going to get a lot of it over the next month. Hot diggity.
Oh, yeah. Coming for you.
Yes, sir.
You're welcome, and we're sorry.
I'm definitely not sorry. All right. With that being said, go ahead and plug your podcast, Mr. X-Lapsed.
One last thing about this NXT show. NXT, WWE, whoever you are, if you're going to start naming your show something, give us a show worth watching outside of one match. Please. Please. But other than that, if I'm far less negative on other shows, so if you want to hear that, you can over at chrisandreggie.podbean.com.
Hey, if you'd like to hear me not complain, check this out.
Yes, and not even curse. You can hear X-Lapsed, which is an almost daily program where I discuss the current year X-Men books. A whole lot of other stuff going on there. We're going to be doing our Quester Days program, me and Mr. Bailey, and then our Top Secret, Not a Secret program eventually. I am in the middle of a move, so we've got to wait till I'm settled. But yeah, other than that, you can find blog posts and show notes over at chrisisoninfiniteearth.com. Every single day going on 5 years of daily content the end of this month. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, I'm at Ace Comics.
Mr. Bailey, I hear you have some projects in the works. Tell us what you're working with.
I want to boast that I'm on Parler first before it gets removed from the Google Store. So
I already told you, don't be a Nazi. Rule number one.
I am a right wing something or other. I don't even know what I am. But you'll find me on Parler proudly with two other people. And we don't talk to each other. So there you go. You can find me on Twitter, Charlton_hero. Like Mr. Sheehan said, we've got some projects cooking with Quester Days. We've got the secret, not-so-secret podcast coming our way. And by God, sitting on my hard drive, officially about to debut, like this thing has been literally sitting on my hard drive for an eternity, and it's the first episode of the Superhero Satellite Podcast, and I'm unleashing it to the demons of the Earth on Monday. So it will become a real thing over the W2M network. So check me out on the Twitter, #SuperheroSatellite, and you'll find all that craziness and find out what I've been toiling with and battling with for basically 6 months trying to get this thing out. But anyway, it's going to become a reality. Mark was honored enough to let me dump this project finally onto the interweb for two ears to listen to. So somebody, you guys even, please listen. Thank you. And that's me.
Right. Chris Bailey's going
to
take his
parlor.
Chris Bailey's going to take his pants down and show you what he's working with. That's the plan.
Here's my nuts.
speaking of nuts, last week was all Alexis Haina all night long. We reviewed Red Sonja and Vampirella, Meet Betty and Veronica. We reviewed the first part of season one of The Wonderful World of Mickey, and we reviewed series two of His Dark Materials, which is based on The Subtle Knife. Next week, we've got Chris Sheehan is back in the saddle again. And he and
I am.
Finally. Oh, sorry.
Yes, sir. The Boys, Volume 2, get some. Okay. The second volume of the series of The Boys Trades. Because, of course, the next night on the TV party, myself, Jesse Starcher, and Robert Winfrey will be talking The Boys Season 2. It's a new year, so we've got new boxing podcast. Pat Mullen and I will be bringing you the next chapter in the history of heavyweight boxing. We'll be talking about George Foreman. And then, finally...
Can I be on one episode, Mark?
Sure. What episode?
Can I be on the Logan Paul episode?
When we get there. Absolutely. And then, finally, we'll be myself, Cole Marantet, and Sean Comer, in theory. We will all be discussing the second chapter of the Transformers War for Cybertron, Earthrise.
Ooh, so, loves it.
Yeah. So that's all coming up, or has been, on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, on the W2M Network. For the Podsmen, I'm Mark Rattlesnake. Be well, be safe, and behave.